CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
From room 309 at the Drift Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, this is Obscure. Season 4 in American Tragedy. I'm your host, your friend, your ear lover, and literary mansplainer-in-chief, Michael Ian Black. Only a few hours away now from performing at the famous Ryman Auditorium, home of the Grand Ole Opry and various other musical endeavors. The state is performing this eve here in Nashville. We've been here a couple days. We haven't been doing the show for the last few months, so we assembled early in Music City to rehearse, see the sights, eat goo goo clusters, whatever. And then from here we go to Austin for a couple days, and then I go to LA for a couple days, and then I come home. Martha is currently lying in this hotel bed beside me, annoyed with me for recording a podcast when she would prefer the quiet, and I hardly blame her. From last week until this, the allergies have not improved particularly, as you may be able to hear in my voice, maybe not, but hopefully they will not present the same sort of challenges we underwent during the last episode when I really just couldn't even breathe. If you happen to be in Nashville, the wife and I just went to a terrific little restaurant called The Red-Headed Stranger. They serve tacos and burritos and crunch wraps and all freshly made. They make the tortillas there. Delicious. Last night we went to a pinball bar. That was kind of fun. I wasn't planning on going to a pinball bar, but the bar that we were planning on going to was kind of like a little speakeasy thing. And I guess, I don't know what the deal is, but you have to wait outside just to get inside. And I don't know why they would do that when there's another bar literally around the corner that you don't have to wait for at all. So we met our friend Brian Quinn of Impractical Jokers fame, and we met David Wayne of David Wayne fame. And we had beers and played pinball, and I petted a bearded dragon, which is a lizard. Oh, I would say it's probably about 2.5 feet long, red in color. And there's this lady walking around with a bearded dragon on her shirt. You know how bearded dragon people are. All they want to do is talk about their lizard. So we talked about the lizard a little bit, and I got to pet it. I'd never pet a lizard before. It was bumpy, and it felt like you would think it would feel sort of scaly and hard. And I wouldn't say pleasant. It was like petting a Braille book, sort of what it was like. What book, it was unclear, but it very well may have been an American Tragedy. I don't know. Then we smoked a little marijuana. I couldn't quite this is my problem with smoking things. I can't quite inhale. I don't know why. I have some sort of problem with inhalation. Not when it comes to oxygen, but when it comes to smoky things. So I didn't really feel it, but the others did, and they had a grand old time, and I was just sort of also having a fine time, but not as mirthful, perhaps, as theirs. And then for all of that, I was in bed by 10:30. Fabulous. And now here I am in room 309 recording An American Tragedy. And like an idiot, of course, I did forget to bring the book. But last time I forgot to bring the book on another road trip, somebody said, well, you know, you can just get the whole text right there on the computer. And so that's what I did. I cranked up the old research machine and I said, hey, show me the entire text of An American Tragedy. And somebody had already uploaded it. So I don't got to pay for it. I don't got to do nothing. I just got to sit here and read it, which is great. We're starting a new chapter today, chapter 26 in book 2, Clyde. We left off last time. He was sort of fantasizing about how if he ever runs into Hortense again, she's going to be mighty surprised when she sees how he's come up in the world, and no doubt a little bit jealous. At least that's what he hopes. They didn't leave things in the best of terms, and he knows that she's gone off with some fella who probably bought her a fur coat, and that's where we're kind of picking things up now. Clyde has begun work at his uncle's collar factory. He's put in a few days of drudgery already in the shrinking rooms, the shit pits, and he does suspect that he's being given a slightly lighter load than the hoi polloi that surround him, those roughnecks from various ports around the world who have spent years in the shrinking room, the bottom of the Emporium's hierarchy. And Clyde, at this point, I think, knows if he does his job well and keeps his nose clean, he won't be stuck there forever. So why don't we pick it up? Book 2, Chapter 26, An American Tragedy. Insofar as his life at Mrs. Cuppy's went, that I guess is the boarding room matron, he was not so very happily placed there either. For that was but a commonplace rooming and boarding house, which drew to it, at best, such conservative mill and business types as looked on work and their wages and the notions of the middle-class religious world of Lycurgus as most essential to the order and well-being of the world. From the point of view of entertainment or gaiety, it was, in the main, a very dull place. Well, yeah, I mean, look, you walk around Broadway here in Nashville and you see young people kicking up their heels, listening to music, going yee-haw, waving their cowboy hats around. None of that's going on for Clyde out there in Lycurgus. There's just nothing going on there at all, but that's okay. You know, he's establishing himself. He's making his way in the world, however dull. At the same time, because of the presence of one Walter Dillard, a brainless sprig who had recently come here from Fonda, it was not wholly devoid of interest for Clyde. The latter, a youth of about Clyde's own age and equally ambitious socially, but without Clyde's tact or discrimination, anent the governing facts of life, anent, A-N-E-N-T. I already got the research machine open, but this could be a challenge. You may have to re-crank it just to see if the research machine has ever heard of this word, anent, anent. It's archaic, it's Scottish, it means concerning or about. How do you pronounce it?
Anent.
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 Anent. Like Will Anent, you know, that very famous, funny actor, Will Anent. The governing facts of life was connected with the men's furnishing department of Stark & Company. He was spry, avid, attractive enough physically, with very light hair, a very light and feeble mustache, and the delicate airs and ways of a small town Beau Brummel. Now, I've heard of Beau Brummel, but again, I don't know what that is or who that is, so I'm going to have to see. Beau Brummel was a socialite, I see. An important figure in Regency England, and for many years He was sort of the definition of style and impeccable tailoring and meticulous grooming. Introduced the modern men's suit, for example. So that's Beau Brummel. Never having had any social standing or the use of any means whatsoever, his father, having been a small-town dry goods merchant before him who had failed, he was, because of some atavistic spur or fillip in his own blood, most anxious to attain some sort of social position. But failing that so far, he was interested in and envious of those who had it, much more so than Clyde even. Okay, so you remember when, when they first were saying, hey, let's spin Fraser Crane off into his own series after Cheers ended, they had themselves a bit of a problem, which was that in the world of Cheers, Fraser was the erudite, even borderline effeminate character there at the bar, and the creators of Fraser wanted to put Fraser Crane, sort of, they wanted to center him, not only in terms of the show, but also in terms of the relationships in his life. So they invented people on either side of him, if that makes sense. So on one side, you've got the dad, who is the gruff macho dude. And on the other side, you've got his brother Niles, who's even swishier than Fraser. So when you compare the three of them, Fraser looks like the normal dude. When on Cheers, he was an eccentric and an oddball. So Dreiser apparently is doing the same thing here with Walter Dillard. He's just like Clyde, but he's more so. So that ends up centering Clyde a little bit, gives us something to compare him to. The glory and activity of the leading families of this particular city had enormous weight with him. The Nicholsons, the Starks, the Harriets, Griffiths, Finchleys, etc. And learning a few days after Clyde's arrival of his somewhat left-handed connection with this world, he was most definitely interested. What? A Griffiths? The nephew? And it sounds like I'm commenting, but I'm really just reading now verbatim in a funny voice. What? A Griffiths? The nephew of the rich Samuel Griffiths of Lycurgus? And in this boarding house, beside him at this table? At once, his interest rose to where he decided that he must cultivate this stranger as speedily as possible. Here was a real social opportunity knocking at his very door, a connecting link to one of the very best families. And besides, was he not young, attractive, and probably ambitious like himself? A fellow to play around with if one could. Well, that reads very differently today in 2024 than it probably did 100 years ago. When you say somebody is young, attractive, and ambitious like himself, a fellow to play around with, well, that sounds to me like, they might spend some time in the bathtub together, something like that. He proceeded at once to make overtures to Clyde. It seemed almost too good to be true. In consequence, he was quick to suggest a walk. The fact that there was a certain movie just on at the Mohawk, which was excellent, very snappy. Didn't Clyde want to go? And because of his neatness, smartness, a touch of something that was far from humdrum or the heavy practicality of the mill, and the remainder of this boarding house world, Clyde was inclined to fall in with him. Yes, because we know the kind of chap that Clyde is attracted to, exactly the kind of chap that Walter Dillard is, a striver, a social climber, a TikTok and viner, a whiner, periodontic chimer? I don't know why periodontic, but it just seemed like syllabically it would work. And then chimer, those two words don't belong together. So look, what are we going to do? Are we going to get hung up on this, or are we going to continue with the story? My suggestion is we continue with the story, but you're going to have to make your own decision. And if you decide to discontinue listening to this podcast altogether, I will respect that. It feels like an overreaction, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. It's your life. But as he now thought, They are here were his great relatives, and he must watch his step here, smart kid. Who knew but that he might be making a great mistake in holding such free and easy contacts as this? The Griffiths, as well as the entire world of which they were a part, as he guessed from the general manner of all those who even contacted him, must be very removed from the commonalty here. More by instinct than reason, he was inclined to stand off and look very superior, more so since those, including this very youth on whom he practiced this, seemed to respect him the more. And although upon eager and even after its fashion supplicating request, he now went with this youth, still he went cautiously, and his aloof and condescending manner Dillard at once translated as class and connection, and to think he had met him in this dull, dubby boarding house here, and on his arrival at the very inception of his career here. And so his manner was that of the sycophant, although he had a better position and was earning more money than Clyde was at this time, $22 a week. And that is no small chunk of change. I need not remind you. I mean, it's not a fortune by any means, but, you know, a young single fella on 22 bucks a week in Lycurgus can probably live okay. Well, let's take a break, read a blow my nose and scratch my butt and do all the things I need to do. And we shall return in a moment here on Obscure.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back on Obscure with Clyde and his new friend, Walter Dillard, although friend is hardly the description that is probably best applied to their relationship. What he has found, more than a friend, is a supplicant, one who will follow him around and look at him with puppy eyes, because Clyde, at least in this fellow's eyes, this Walter Dillard, in his eyes, Clyde is a real prospect. He's a man of the upper social echelon, even if he has not fully entered that world as of yet. And if Walter Dillard can get in good with Clyde Griffiths, perhaps Clyde will take him with him as he ascends the social classes of Lycurgus. If you, reader, listener, or found yourself in a similar position as Walter, you might do the same, because we are all of us looking for some sort of edge, some sort of way to better our position in the world. It is a minority of us who are content with our lots in life and do not see any need for further advancement. I also suspect that as you get older, that does happen more and more. You're like, ah, fuck it. Like, I'm fine the way I am. Like, I don't need any more than this. But when you're 21, 22 years old, making your way in the world, looking around at the vast horizons out there, you think to yourself, wow, if I could just get there, and how am I going to? I need to get a horse to ride. And look at that fella, has a fine filly. And maybe we can ride off towards that sunset together. That's what I'm saying. We understand. I suppose you'll be spending a good deal of your time with your relatives and friends here, he volunteered on the occasion of their first walk together, and after he had extracted as much information as Clyde cared to impart, which was almost nothing, while he volunteered a few most decidedly furbished bits from his own history. His father owned a dry goods store now. He had come over here to study other methods, etc. He had an uncle here, connected with Stark & Company. He had met a few, not so many as yet, nice people here, since he hadn't been here so very long himself, 4 months all told. But Clyde's relatives. Saw your uncle must be worth over $1 million, isn't he? They say he is. Owes houses and Waikiki Avenue are certainly the cats. You won't see anything finer in Albany or Utica or Rochester either. Are you Samuel Griffith's own nephew? You don't say. Well, that'll certainly mean a lot to you here. I wish I had a connection like that. You bet I'd make it count. He beamed on Clyde eagerly and hopefully, and through him, Clyde sensed even more how really important this blood relation was. Only think how much it meant to this strange youth. Oh, I don't know, replied Clyde dubiously, and yet very much flattered by this assumption of intimacy. I came on to learn the collar business, you know, not to play about very much. My uncle wants me to stick to that pretty much. Sure, sure, I know how that is, replied Dillard. That's the way my uncle feels about me, too. He wants me to stick close to the work here, not play about very much. He's the buyer for Stark & Company, you know, but still, a man can't work all the time either. He's got to have a little fun. Yes, that's right, said Clyde, for the first time in his life, a little condescendingly. Well, I didn't perform that very condescendingly, so let's go back and try it again. Still, a man can't work all the time either. He's got to have a little fun. Yes, that's right, said Clyde, and for the first time in his life, a little condescendingly. They walked along in silence for a few moments, then... Do you dance? Yes, answered Clyde. Well, so do I. There are a lot of cheap dance halls around here, but I never go to any of those. You can't do it and keep in with the nice people. This is an awfully close town that way, they say. The best people won't have anything to do with you unless you go with the right crowd. It's the same way up at Fonda. You have to belong, or you can't go out anywhere at all. And that's right, I guess, but still... There are a lot of nice girls here that a fella can go with. Girls of right nice families. Not in society, of course, but still, they're not talked about, see? And they're not so slow, either. Pretty hot stuff, some of them. And you don't have to marry any of them, either. Clyde began to think of him as perhaps a little too lusty for his new life here, maybe. At the same time, he liked him some. By the way, went on Dillard, what are you doing next Sunday afternoon? Well... Nothing in particular that I know of just now, replied Clyde, sensing a new problem here. I don't know just what I may have to do by then, but I don't know of anything now. Well, how'd you like to come with me if you're not too busy? I've come to know quite a few girls since I've been here, nice ones. I can take you out and introduce you to my uncle's family if you like. They're nice people. And afterwards, I know two girls we can go and see. Peaches. One of them did work in the store, but she don't now. She's not doing anything now. The other is her pal. They have a Victrola, and they can dance. I know it isn't the thing to dance here on Sundays, but no one need know anything about that. The girl's parents don't mind. Afterwards, we might take them to a movie or something, if you want to. Not any of those things down near the Mill District, but one of the better ones, see? Well, here's my question as we're listening to Walter Dillard speak. He was introduced immediately... as a brainless sprig, but there doesn't seem to be anything particularly brainless about Walter. He is ambitious, certainly, and lusty, as Clyde noticed, and, enjoys dancing and having fun. And, well, what 22-year-old isn't exactly like that? Walter, you're okay in my book, kid. You're fine by me. And I don't know what Ted Dreiser has against you, but as far as I'm concerned, you're doing just fine. There formulated itself in Clyde's mind the question as to what, in regard to just such proposals as this, his course here was to be. In Chicago, and recently, because of what happened in Kansas City, and guys, we're not going to talk about that. He killed a girl. Look, he killed a girl with his bare hands, strangled her until her head popped off. Because of what happened in Kansas City, he had sought to be as retiring and cautious as possible. For, after that, and while connected with the club, he had been taken with the fancy of trying to live up to the ideals with which the seemingly stern face of that institution had inspired him. Conservatism, hard work, saving one's money, looking neat and gentlemanly. It was such an eveless paradise that. Oh, I like that. Eveless paradise, Eve being capitalized. In other words, just dudes doing dude stuff. You know, fraternal dude stuff at that men's only hotel where he kept his nose clean, didn't go chasing after skirts, and skirts didn't find him. He's leading a chaste, upstanding lifestyle. But we know in his heart of hearts, Clyde, of course, huge horn dog. I mean, he was panting after Hortense like nobody's business. And we understand what happened after that. But, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to say he's going to be celibate his whole life. We're going to say he's never going to fall in love or have romance just because of one girl he killed. Come on, grow up. In spite of his quiet surroundings here, however, the very air of the city seemed to suggest some such relaxation as this youth was now suggesting. A form of diversion that was probably innocent enough, but still connected with girls and their entertainment. There were so many of them here, as he could see. These streets, after dinner here, were so alive with good-looking girls and young men, too. But what might his newfound relatives think of him in case he was seen stepping about in the manner and spirit which this youth's suggestions seemed to imply? Hadn't he just said that this was an awfully close town and that everybody knew nearly everything about everybody else? He paused in doubt. He must decide now. And then, being lonely and hungry for companionship, he replied, "Yes, well, I think that's all right." But he added a little dubiously, "Of course, my relatives here." "Oh, sure, that's all right," replied Dillard smartly. "You have to be careful, of course." "Well, so do I." If he could only go around with the Griffiths, even if he was new around here and didn't know many people, wouldn't it reflect a lot of credit on him? And forthwith he offered to buy Clyde some cigarettes, a soda, anything he liked. But Clyde, still feeling very strange and uncertain, excused himself after a time, because this youth, with his complacent worship of society and position, annoyed him a little, and made his way back to his room. He had promised his mother a letter, and he thought he had better go back and write it, and incidentally, to think a little on the wisdom of this new contact. End of chapter. Well, we have introduced, I would say, a fun little wrinkle into this story. Here we've got Walter Dillard, of the same make and type of Ratterer and all the other boys that he was hanging around with in Kansas City. These wild youths looking for fun, looking to score some action out there on the city streets, prone to getting chops at grill houses. Is that a grill house? Chop house. Prone to getting, oh, I don't know, pie-yards at chop houses. A pie-yard? What's a pie-yard? Is that really what I think it is? Wait, I have to crank up the research machine and look up what a pie-yard is. A dish in which a piece of meat is hit or pressed to make it thin and flat. Yeah, I got it right. Pie-yard at some chop house. And, for all of that, he's finding himself now in a new position, having to consider the orbits of those around him, whereas before, he was just up there, a satellite, a planet all to himself. But now, he is orbiting this great mass of the Griffiths family, and any misstep may send him hurtling into the sun. So he has to be very cautious about how he proceeds, and he recognizes this now for the first time, having met Walter Dunhill, who, in a sense, was very much where Clyde was not even a month before. Remember Clyde supplicating himself before his great uncle, practically on his hands and knees, begging for a job at the collar factory. And then when he sees that same attitude reflected back at him in the wiles of Walter Dunhill, he feels conflicted and a little repulsed. Because we all find ourselves repulsed, I think, by the qualities that we notice in others, which we dislike in ourselves. And Clyde Griffiths may not have recognized until this moment how he might come across to others if he isn't careful. And so he is being a bit more contemplative and a bit more thoughtful in terms of how he proceeds in the world. And yet, here, dangled on a fishing line for him, two nice young ladies with a Victrola. You know, you just go over there on a Sunday and you cut a rug or two, and then you take them to that chop house and you get the Paillards and you go see an RKO picture at the picture house. And what's the harm in that? What's the harm of squiring around a young lady, even if she isn't of the upper rungs of society? Where is the harm? Well, we don't know where the harm is yet, but I suspect we will find out on another traumatic episode of Obscure. But until then, I wish you adieu.
This season of Obscure is produced by me, Michael Ian Black, and the great Robin Lynn. Our theme song is by Craig Wedren. We rely on you, the listeners, for support. So please, go to patreon.com/Michael Ian Black. Sign up. There's all kinds of fun stuff. There's goodies. You could join the book club where we get together. We talk about the book that we're reading. And it's just a fun community. So, you know, head on over to patreon.com/Michael Ian Black. And I will see you next time.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.